From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Monday, May 4. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 6,819 cases of coronavirus. But since yesterday, nationwide, just 16 new cases have been confirmed as we continue to flatten the curve. I'm joined now by Climate and Environment Editor Nick O'Malley. Welcome back to Please Explain, Nick.
Good to be here.
This is your first appearance on the podcast since your appointment as National Climate and Environment Editor for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Got you on here today to talk about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on global emissions. What's the story?
The story is mixed. Climate stories are always mixed, always. I'm coming to learn. So the immediate impact has been, as people know, there's been a massive and very sharp drop in climate emissions, in carbon emissions. The World Meteorological Organization reckons so far it's about 5.5 to 5.7% drop year on year, which is more than we've ever seen. So that's the good news. But the bad news is that if we were to be on track to meet Paris targets, which is those designed to keep the world underneath a warming of 1.5 degrees, we'd need to be dropping by 7%.
Right.
So the horror show here is we've stopped the entire global economy, aeroplanes aren't flying and people aren't driving, and we're still not doing it. So that's pretty grim.
So it's almost impossible, really.
No, it means that as technology changes and as policies are introduced around the world, each year we have to keep on increasing our ambition. So it is 7% year on year if we were to have a smooth run to 1.5. But, you know, it would be more if we were going to go to 2 degrees by 2050. And built into this is the assumption, not that we'll go year by year by year, but as our technology improves and our economies shift and decarbonize, there'll be hopefully leaps and advances. And that's the second half of this story. Mm. This crisis gives us impetus, I suppose, or gives policymakers impetus to change how we're doing things. And that's the debate that's already breaking out. There are organisations, financial, economic, environment organisations around the world now beginning to lobby governments urgently on how we rebuild and stimulate economies to come out of this. Do we build green economies coming out? Or do we, you know, follow the path that we're already on? And the hope is that this is a moment when we can start building green economies.
So for those of us like me who don't fully understand where emissions come from by ratio, we've almost completely stopped air travel. We've reduced road travel. Why are emissions still so high? Is that because we haven't cut our electricity use? Manufacturing is still underway. Mining and energy is still a big industry.
Yeah, and it's mainly we're powering. We're still turning on the light switches. And that means that we're burning fossil fuels, mostly. But renewable energy is rapidly increasing. It's already displacing coal around the world. Because we're driving less, but also because there's been an unrelated but coincidentally timed war over oil between Saudi Arabia and Russia and the United States, oil prices have fallen through the floor. And so that's still being burned. Oil and gas is still burned for energy use in many places. It's not just a transport fuel. So what has to happen next from a climate perspective is that we keep on displacing those fuel sources, coal in particular, and then oil and gas, from our energy mix.
And where are we on that at the moment? I know Angus Taylor has had some things to say to Mike Foley in the last few days about the future of hydrogen in Australia.
Yeah, he spoke about both gas and hydrogen, and they're related. So hydrogen is a great technology. It's a technology that the chief scientist Finkel has been promoting for a long time. It's now one that Angus Taylor supports. Hydrogen, if you build a hydrogen car, and this is proven technology, they exist, obviously not at scale. Hydrogen trains and buses also exist. So the hope is over the next 10, 20 years, we can transfer our transport energy to hydrogen, and Australia can create a lot of hydrogen and it can become an export earner as well. But you have to make hydrogen, and to make hydrogen, you need energy, weirdly enough. And in Australia, a lot of the proposals relate to gas, that we burn gas to create hydrogen, to export hydrogen. So there's this debate between green hydrogen and brown hydrogen. Climate activists would say, well, no, gas shouldn't be part of the mix. We should be unrolling renewable energy, building solar arrays in deserts to create hydrogen as an export industry. Those in between would argue, no, we need to get this technology developed so quickly that we should be using any energy source we can to develop the technology. And that would be a mix from, I think, Angus Taylor's perspective of gas and green.
Okay, so moving on to the global politics of this, Nick, there was supposed to be a big meeting in Scotland later this year, the COP26 meeting, to talk about where everyone is on meeting their Paris targets and their commitments. That meeting has had to be postponed. Has it been rescheduled yet?
No, not yet. Well, they're talking about sometime next year, but we don't know when yet.
And how significant is it that that meeting has been scrapped from the global calendar for 2020?
It's really significant because this year was to be the pivotal year for climate action. This was the year where we would see not only the targets locked in, the targets are locked in, but those targets which we've been discussing around the world, they are meant to be floors, not ceilings. So countries were meant to come to the COP meeting and they were meant to say, okay, here's what we've achieved so far. We've hit the target. Here is our next goal. Here is how we're bringing it down faster. And this is where we get back to that, you know, 7% reduction. This is where they were meant to be outlining how they were doing that. The fact that that's been delayed is a significant concern. On the other hand, there's a lot of countries which are already committed and recommitting to increase targets, even though the meeting hasn't happened. That's particularly the case in Europe. The UK has been really strong on this. I think 17 of 25 EU nations have already signed up to a Green New Deal. The other thing that will be pivotal this year will be the US elections. If Donald Trump is re-elected, it makes life harder for those who would like to see the Paris Climate Agreement being prosecuted because he doesn't believe in it. And then you have the role of China. China's kind of been given a free card. If the US is not acting, well, then there's less international pressure on China to act. China's announced that it will stimulate its economy, partly by the creation of new coal-fired power stations. I think in March it approved the creation of more than it had over the entire past 18 months. Again, that's mixed news. You know, it looks like only bad news, but it's mixed. Because at the same time, they're retiring coal-fired power stations that are only a decade old. And the ones they're building are more efficient.
So they're not running old clunkers like ours?
They're not running old clunkers like ours. And further, they seem to be as interested in building them as they are in using them. A lot of them only run to the capacity of 50%. So a lot needs to be done whether or not the COP goes ahead, and a lot is happening, but as is always the case in this story, it's not enough yet and it's not fast enough.
So one of the controversial positions that Australia was going to take into that meeting was that it wanted to use Kyoto carryover credits in our calculation of our emissions reduction. That meeting would have put a lot of pressure on that position globally. Our politicians would have felt the heat over that. Are they off the hook on that now that they don't have to go to Glasgow and make their case?
There will still be pressure applied to them internationally, but yeah, they won't be embarrassed on a grand global stage as they would have been. And this goes back to that ceiling, not a floor. This was, you know, Australia seems to be scraping through, or this government at the moment seems to be willing to scrape through on the bare minimum when the whole process is predicated on people beating targets, doing better and better each year. Politically, it'll be less awkward for them. On the other hand, I was speaking with the chair of ARENA, the Australian Renewable Energy Agency, the other day, who said that, you know, he does see great movement in the uptake of renewables in Australia, and a lot of it which is supported by this government, while it doesn't like to discuss it that much.
Probably because it makes economic sense for them to support it? Is that why they're doing
it? Yeah. There's a lot of reason. If you look at there's a lot of good economic and financial reason to be embracing renewables. If you look at the market capitalization of old fossil fuels in the United States over the past decade, they've flatlined or contracted. Renewables have hugely expanded. There's a lot more space for growth in renewables than there is in fossil fuels.
So just finally, Nick, leaving the postponement of COP out of it, is there any risk that the global pandemic has sort of created such a attention-sucking incident that governments around the world are going to be able to put climate change action on the back burner?
There's a huge risk of that. When I speak with people about this around the world, that's the primary concern, that this was to be the year. Not only was that COP meeting that we've discussed on, but because, you know, the world burned, it wasn't just Australia, but parts of the world that have never burnt before burnt across North and South America, in Siberia, in the United States. There was real attention and real momentum. And those countries, cities and states that have declared a climate emergency, and there's many of them, they're all saying, this is going to take all of our attention to solve this. all of government's attention, not just, you know, a ministry or a department in each government. And that's what's been lost. That's what's really concerning people.
Our Black Summer was supposed to be the story of 2020, wasn't it?
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Nick, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Nicole Presell and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech teams at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.